The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined by Billy Hand, CEO of Dublin Bus, to look at where the service stands from their current recruitment drive to plans for expanding routes and fleet capacity, alongside the challenges of rising fuel costs, decarbonisation, congestion in the city, the misuse of bus lanes, ongoing concerns about antisocial behaviour. Billy Hand, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. It's great to be here.
I've listed your headaches there.
Quite a lot to get through, for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about antisocial behaviour first of all, because if you're on a bus and there's messing going on, it can be very uncomfortable.
It can, for sure. And look, what we're trying to do is create a more comfortable journey for our customers and for our employees as well. I've been on the show before talking about our Safer Journeys team when we actually introduced it. We did have four security guards at that time operating on ourselves. We've expanded
teams
that
of two.
Six now. Teams of two, so six in total. So we now have two working on the north of the city, two on the south side, and two in central Dublin. And it's been reasonably successful, Pat. It's not a silver bullet, which we said it would have been. We said that at the time. And the reality is, when I look at the number of incidents in 2025, we're about 1,044 versus 1,054 the previous year. But we've carried more passengers, so the rate is actually reducing.
But in 2019, it was only 500.
That's very, very true. And that's why we introduced that onto the service. Now, look, we do have the Transport Security Force being stood up by this government, and they're in the process of doing that at the moment. So that will help also.
Now, the kind of things that you encounter, people obviously under the influence of drugs are also consuming drugs. People who are under the influence of alcohol, you get fighting, you get pickpocketing. And then something that's really nasty, stone throwing at buses, breaking bus windscreens, stuff like that.
We do get that. We get the whole range of antisocial behaviour, Pat, on our services. Of that 1,044 I mentioned earlier, some very, very minor in nature, some quite serious, up to full assault, as you mentioned there. The stone throwing is a really, really interesting one, because what we tend to do there is, your Safer Journeys team aren't necessarily going to crack that nut, but we do a lot of work with the communities, particularly in various different areas where we do have problems, with counsellors, with the community activists.
Now, sometimes you have to withdraw a service because it's too dangerous. Now, that brings its own pressure on the community, because they'd be saying it's not our fault. Well, it is coming from within your community, so let the people, the community leaders, try to do something about it.
And that's why we use those community leaders to try and address those issues. No better place for issues like that to be addressed from within the community itself. And the councillors help us with that as well. And look, stones have to come from somewhere, right? So it's important, if there is building sites in around the areas, that they're maintained properly as well.
Now, one of the impacts of all of this is, if you get a windscreen that's cracked, it has to be repaired. Now, time was, you'd be pretty sure it might be repaired overnight, but with recruitment of mechanics and all of that, it might not be repaired for a day or two, which means a missing bus.
That's correct. But we would have spare buses in the fleet, which we can roll out for those particular situations. But going back to what you said earlier, if we feel that our customers and our drivers are in danger from stone thrown, and we have had pellicle attacks as well, we will withdraw it for a number of hours. If we feel the issue is resolved, we'll put that service back into operation that day. However, if it continues, we'll withdraw it for the full 24 hours, then reassess it, and if everything's okay, put the service back into operation.
Now, talk to me about the fleet and your capacity, because if you do have to take buses out for whatever reason, for mechanical failure or indeed vandalism, it can give rise to ghost buses, famous ghost buses.
The famous ghost buses, the bane of our lives as bus operators, Pat. Look, the reality is, the bus operation is getting better, it's getting more reliable, it's getting more punctual, and we've put a hell of a lot of work into that. The system which we're operating on, it still is 15 years old. As I've said before, the NTA have signed a contract to replace that system. We should see the piloting of that system a little bit later this year, probably in September.
Now, is the current system 15
months.
Years old? Is that your own system, or is that TFI?
The current one is our own system, and each operator have their own tracking system. The new system, which will go in later this year and into next year, is a TFI, National Transport Authority system, and that will serve all operators.
And I'm wondering, you see, people are saying, I see the bus, whatever it might be, the E2 or the S1 or whatever it might be, it's there, and then it's gone. I mean, when you've got a transponder on a bus, how is it there to begin with if the transponder is indicating to control that the bus is here, and then it never arrives?
So there's two situations for ghost buses normally, Pat. One of them is when you're standing at the bus stop, nothing is on your RTPI or your real-time passenger information, and it arrives. That tends to be a failed transponder on the bus itself.
Yeah.
The one which you're talking about can be for a different reason altogether, and it can be for a number of reasons. So it's counting down on the RTPI, you're expecting it to come, and it doesn't arrive. It could be that the bus driver has gone sick at very, very short notice and hasn't turned up. If that's the case, we should be cancelling that on the system and it should be removed from the RTPI. But if that's not done in a timely manner, unfortunately, that happens.
See, I thought this was real-time tracking, that you've got a transponder on the bus and it wouldn't indicate its presence unless that bus was moving and the transponder was talking to the satellite or whatever.
And I think that the title real-time passenger information is a little bit misleading because it's not quite real-time. So if you think about it, if a bus leaves a depot and you're standing on a bus stop 45 minutes away, it needs a countdown to know when it's actually going to be there. So there is issues around it. And look, you know, if you look at last week, there would have been plenty of people with the protests last week standing at bus stops, and we had to divert those buses from the city because of the issues going on. Those RTPIs would have been telling those passengers that there's a bus arriving because we had so many to cancel. So they're the sort of issues we're trying to deal with on a daily basis.
So that should be rolled out late this year and next.
The piloting of the system is starting in September of this year, and then we should see full implementation within approximately a year after that.
Some of the questions coming in. I live in Balbriggan and I commute 3 days a week into the office in the city. I wait in the cold, the wind and the rain, sometimes up to 45 minutes for the 101X, the worst bus in Ireland. Buses consistently don't turn up. How is this happening so frequently?
Yeah, look, we look at the statistics around all our network, Pat, to see what's performing well and what's not performing well. I can't talk about any individual one today, and I'd be glad, you know, to take that information offline and come back to that individual. But I do apologise to that individual, and we will have a look at that.
Another one, and this is a one you could possibly address. Four buses serve the Sandymount area. None of them run along the Coast Road, which has many beach users, elderly and nursing homes who miss this service since changing the number one route. Are there any plans to facilitate us bus users to the Strand Road again? That's from Patrick. Now, I have to say, Dublin City Council has erected, I think it's 33 obstacles along that road. There are ramps, there are little chicanes, there are roundabouts, which must make it very difficult for buses, I have to say.
For sure, and it's not always straightforward for us to get through various different areas, but that type of problem happens from time to time, Pat, and you'll certainly see it on the introduction of a new Bus Connect spine. You'll find that certain pockets of communities now they don't have the service that they previously had, and they'd be quite vocal about that. But in fairness to the National Transport Authority, they did do an awful lot of consultation on the route design network. When it goes in, if people are having significant issues and they complain to Dublin Bus or the NTA and use their politicians, we do listen to them and we do make changes.
And you have changed. You've made changes.
And we have made changes,
Bus Connects,
particularly on the back end of the last F-spine, which went in November last
year. Now, the whole idea of Bus Connects, and I remember talking to the designer of Bus Connects way, way back when it was first envisaged. And the whole idea was you replicate, if you like, a railway, a DART system or a metro system. So you have spines and then you feed into those spines with local services. But when you look at DART, and I looked at some of this, the latest DART will be able to carry a total of 1,000, more than 1,000 passengers. The best buses you have, 100 at most.
That's correct, Pat, but you can...
So that's 10 buses. And if you think of a DART running every 5 minutes at peak, that's 50,000 per hour. If you think of the number of buses you require to move along a spine, 50,000 an hour, it's just no other traffic would be able to use those routes.
But the bus is the workhorse of the transport system, Pat, and I think it's
sure.
important to recognise that. So whilst you can, in any one carriage, carry more sort of passengers than a bus can carry, you can't put a railway track into anywhere. You can get buses that are much more accessible to estates than, let's say, a railway track would be. We carried 165 million passengers last year. We're higher than the rail, the tram, and all of them put together. So it speaks for itself with regards to the mode of operation which we use.
Buses are so convenient for many people who are close to a route, even though you hear complaints that the buses are whizzing by, they're full. For example, going through Stillorgan, heading for UCD during term time, full of students. And then from Donnybrook in the Grand.
Yeah, and look, you will get a little bit of what we'll say about the universities in particular. Most of them are on a particular Bus Connect spine with very, very high frequency, right? So if you do miss a bus and it's full, generally there's one 4 or 5 minutes later, which you will be able to pick up. So we've done a lot of work on that. Again, going back to what I said earlier, we do meet the NTA on a 2-weekly basis to look at capacity constraints across the network, and where we feel it's needed and we can resource it, we tend to address those issues.
An issue that's come up here, please discuss the driving style of many of your drivers of electric electric buses. These vehicles can accelerate at alarming rates and they speed up over ramps, up to traffic lights and then brake hard. As a passenger, this causes me to feel sick, says that one. Now, they should be using regenerative braking as they come up to traffic lights. It should be almost one pedal driving, to be quite honest.
I drive an electric car myself, so I know the type of torque that's there. Now, the interesting thing about our electric buses, we've dialed down the torque on them to be the same as the diesel bus. So whilst you might get a sensation that you've got instant torque, of course you do, but at the same time, it's actually being dialed down to be similar to what you would get on the diesel bus.
As so, I say, you know, you take your foot off the pedal in an electric car, and if you've got the settings right, the regenerative braking will slow the bus down, just like a brake,
correct,
but more gently, really.
Correct. And you will feel that. You'll feel that as a passenger, but we wouldn't, that complaint that we've had there, we wouldn't see too often.
And tell me about the electric bus fleet. How far are you in the rollout?
Yeah, so we have 140 electric vehicles in our fleet at the moment. So that the last time I spoke to you, we had about 100. Yeah. So we're now up to 140.
And how are they performing?
We do have issues with them, Pat, because it's relatively new technology. There's reliability issues with the bus and the chargers themselves, but we're working very, very hard with the manufacturers, the NTA, on the charging side and the bus side to try and address those particular reliability issues so we can speed up and accelerate the rollout of the electric bus.
Okay, and I mean charging, obviously, you've probably seen the video of the buses in China going on fire next to each other, so you've got to be sure that your safety systems are in place.
Exactly. And look, we would have done a lot of consultation with Dublin Fire Brigade with regards to the use of electric buses and the storage of them and how they, you know, how we charge them and so on. So we're fairly comfortable that we're meeting all the international standards around safety for electric
buses. Question, why is Dublin Bus losing so many drivers and why is it getting staff from South Africa and why drivers can't be used on their days off or something. I'm not sure about that element. But South Africa?
The retention rate's around 7%. So we're one of the best in the industry with regards to retention. But it does equate to about 5 a week. About 40% of them are actually through retirement and about 60% of them are through retention issues. They no longer want to work in the bus industry. We've gone to South Africa largely because, one, they drive on the same side of the road as us. It's very difficult to get D licensed drivers in Ireland. That's why we opened up the B license. You can get them in South Africa. So we have gone to South Africa and we're recruiting 100 South African drivers with D licenses. They're now on the way into Ireland. We're trying to get them work permits, visas, and so on, PPS.
And how are you for mechanics?
Mechanics, we've had to go to the Philippines, Pat. I've made it no secret in the media before myself. We've lost a generation of tradespeople in this country. I think you only have to try and get someone for the house. You know how difficult it is. It's the same with mechanics for Dublin Bus. We've had to go to the Philippines and other areas to try and get full-time mechanics. We have about 60 Filipino mechanics in over the last 2 years to try and fill the sort of demand for our services.
What genius thought it was a good idea to rejig routes to eliminate the direct bus from Houston Station to major Southside artery, the N11, including UCD? Please bring back the old and useful 46A, the legendary 46A.
This goes back to the same question I said earlier, Pat. Like, you know, change is hard for people. And when, you know, you're getting a service from a particular point to another point on a daily basis and it's suddenly not there, it's a problem and an issue for you. But the network is designed for the greater good. It's designed to connect more people to more places more efficiently, and it's doing that.
I live in Clonsilla. I always feel sorry for people living further up that route, for example, on Ongar. I often wonder why the 39X route is not brought in as another route, as it's very direct and still goes close to the centre. Commute time for the 39A is very long, as it is.
And I think it goes back to what I said earlier. The National Transport Authority, when they're designing the route network, they're looking at everything. They're looking at the connections. They're looking at the spines. They're looking at the radials and what's going to feed into it. They're looking at what other services may be available across intermodal areas. So they're looking at it in totality rather than just one single route and one single area. So they have the big picture. They've come up with a design. By and large, it works well. We do take feedback, as I said, from customers when it's not working well, and we adjust accordingly.
The final area really is traffic and how you cope with the traffic. Even with your bus lanes, you occasionally get people blocking the bus lanes. Sometimes bus lanes are shared with cyclists, which seemed to me to be daft, but there's a limited amount of road space, I know. So it must be torture for your drivers trying to get through Dublin City at rush hour.
It's probably the biggest headache that we have with regards to providing a reliable and a punctual service, Pat, is not having dedicated bus corridors. Bus Connects is looking at putting in 12 dedicated bus corridors, which can't come quick enough as far as I'm concerned. With regards to the current ones that are there, they are infringed by motorists on a regular basis, so we need more enforcement from that perspective. Our vehicles are running on average around 16 kilometres an hour. At peak time, they're running at 14. At quieter times, 20 kilometres an hour. We need to fix that. And we need to fix that by having bus lanes that we have enforcement on and getting the dedicated bus corridors.
Sometimes it appears that, you know, it's an obstacle course to get through Dublin with between roadworks and plastic bollards sticking up. And around here, Dublin Corporation put in flower beds.
Interesting. And we do an awful lot of work with Dublin City Council around our concerns with regards to bollards or obstacles that crop up from time to time. And in fairness to them, they're quite reactive when we go to them with regards to various different issues to resolve.
Billy Han, thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you here to answer our listeners' questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.